This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 85, where we're going to cover some cloud news and talk to Jerry Pierre from Slack National Accelerator Laboratory, recorded live July 1st, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, AC.
Morning! How you doing, man?
Chipper, mate. Absolutely chipper. It's July the 1st. It's the start of a new financial year for Microsoft. Not that that means anything to anybody except me.
Yeah, because you have a new budget now.
Everything starts in a new year, change of direction in terms of like any different plans that you got for the next year. All the budgeting stuff is all done. Projects get underway in full swing. Like if you're not hitting July the 1st and in full noise, then you're not off to a good start. So I'm pretty amped and excited.
Yeah, man. It's and I guess you've also got. Oh, sorry, your picture just went big on me.
When that happens,
wrong button. CJ just went full screen on me, and your camera's still screwed up, and you're still blue, so it totally messed me up.
Yeah,
it's also the time when, and we're going to cover a little bit of this, but also the time when the Microsoft's CEO Satya Nadella decided to shed a few businesses or line of businesses or products or whatever, however you want to call it, from Microsoft's core business. But it's pretty cool. I like the bold move of just like, you know what, this isn't core. Goodbye.
Yeah, that I think is actually pretty cool move. I mean, it may suck for the people involved. Like, don't get me wrong. That would be a tough thing to go through. But hey, having said that, there were some folks from the Bing mapping team that ended up going to Uber, as I understand it, which, gee, if you were going to end up somewhere, like I could think of worse places.
Yeah, I don't question that at all. I agree with you. Uber would be a fun place to work right now. Cool tech, cool, like cutting edge kind of stuff. Of course, I would not want to be a Uber French executive right now. You've seen that news, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like the Paris lockdown and the guy got arrested and oh, man.
They arrested the top two executives there for operating an illegal taxi service.
Listen, if there's one place in the world you don't with unions, it's in France.
Yeah, no, it's just if there's one, we're going to lose our French contingent right here. But if there's one place you don't want to do business, I would say it's in France right now.
I don't know about that. Like, I don't know. They're very staunch about their labor laws and unions and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, have no problem telling you when they don't feel good about it.
Exactly. I guess the real place you don't want to do business right now is in Greece because of the money problems that they're having.
Yeah, the world's messed up, right? Like the banks are not giving anybody money anymore. They're shut down. There's a bunch of things going on. They've defaulted on loans yesterday or today or
yesterday.
Yesterday, that was their first default or whatever. It'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah. Sorry, I just lost our Greek contingent as well. So. Yeah.
Hey, Ralph, you're doing a great job. Two for two, buddy.
By episode 100, we won't have any of Europe left.
Yeah.
Which will be just about the right time because that's when I'm going to Amsterdam to go speak at a conference for Unity Connect. So I'll show up like, we hate you. And they'll all pick at me and then I'll be arrested.
You're on a relationship rebuilding tour later this year.
Yeah, I'm not too good at that whole PR thing, but
yeah,
and I work from home a little too much.
There you go. Well, yeah. Hey, so Maps was one thing, but AOL, and not just like, you know,
You got mail. You got ads.
Not that sort of AOL, but now it's like, you've got ads.
Actually, it might be more appropriate to say that we've got your ads.
Yeah, true. So they're taking over a bunch of the ad business from Microsoft and also replacing Google Search on all their properties with Bing Search. And it was kind of interesting because they've got a ton of interesting properties like TechCrunch, right? I think is an AOL property. The Verge, is that an AOL property? No, that's Vox, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's Vox. But I think, yeah, and there's was it AOL or was it whoever owns TechCrunch now is the company that's behind or that's against a lot of the net neutrality stuff. So you have to kind of look at TechCrunch and be like,
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not doing any kind of like trying to be, you know, conspiracy theory, anything like that. But, and you got to look at who owns stuff. I mean, who does, what different companies own it? There's different, different influences and stuff. So you just have to, is anybody independent anymore?
Yeah. It's all a big conspiracy.
Yeah.
So that's some interesting news.
I was more surprised that AOL was still around and they had money to buy an ad business.
I think it's quite a big, I still think AOL is a pretty big business. They're trying to get in, you know, they've been buying up content publishing businesses for quite some time. Like GDGT, do you remember that?
No.
GDGT.com. I think that was the website. It's like a gadget website, which was started by, I think, Peter Rojas and Ryan Block.
Not familiar.
They bought them. They work at AOL now. Engadget is owned by AOL. There's a bunch of content, techie content sites that draw big crowds, lots of traffic. That's run by AOL. So that's where all those ads are going to show up. They're going to switch to this new ad platform, and they're going to switch to Bing for search. So that was kind of cool. I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
And 1,200 people leave Microsoft to go to AOL, I think. Or at least will be offered jobs at AOL.
Yeah. Was it probably one of those things where they're offered jobs at AOL or they're given X amount of time to find another job at Microsoft, something like that?
Probably. I'm sure it's not, you know, they won't be forced to go to AOL, I'm sure. So
yeah, that's like slavery, right?
Yeah. Hey, here's an interesting fact. Do you, you know, AOL was all, you know, it was all dial-up business to begin with, right?
Right.
So way back in the day, MSN had got started, you know, the Microsoft Network, I think it stands for, right? MSN?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That too was had a dial-up subscription service once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft bought a bunch of companies back then and added a whole bunch of subscribers. And I tell you what, to this day, there are still MSN dial-up customers.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was talking to a buddy about this the other day. And it's a not insignificant number as well. Like you'd be like, what? I'm pretty sure half of them are dead, but their credit cards are still running. And so service. You'd hope, right? But I'm sure there's people that still like dial-ups all they got. They're in the middle of, you know, I was going to say something really rude, but I'll just say absolutely nowhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, is there broadband in the middle of the, in the out in the remote areas of, like, say, North or South Dakota or Nebraska or something, in the remote areas, like the ones where you watch a movie and there's a road driving, they're driving forever, and then there's a house in the middle of a cornfield or something like that.
Yeah.
I doubt there's fiber or cable going out there.
Yeah, you'd hope not.
So
that seems like a waste of money.
Hey, we're stuck with dial-up in my vacation place up in the western North Carolina mountains. We're up in the middle of up on a mountain, and now we have a cell phone coverage. I like that.
It's telling you something. It's like, you should be disconnected.
Oh, I love it. It's funny. My family keeps asking me, you know, can we get broadband? Can we get high-speed internet up here? And I keep looking around like, I'm not the one to set it up, man. This is where I go to get away from, to get off the grid. Like, we just got a cell phone tower on one mountain over. Now we get good AT&T coverage. I'm like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah. I call it DNS, disconnected network syndrome. And you start getting those little funny shakes when you can't check Facebook and stuff. It's like for the first day and then you're good.
Yeah. I like that.
Anyway, we better get on to some news, I suppose.
Yeah, well, we did some news, so let's go to some other news.
Oh, yeah, I guess we did. All right, so next one. I'll kick this off. Azure Billing APIs are available.
Yes.
This is pretty sweet. There's two APIs. One's called the Azure Usage API, and the other one's called the Azure Rate Card API. And we'll start with the Rate Card one because that's kind of near and dear to our heart with what we've not been doing with Curb, which... For those of you who want to know more about this API, you go check this out on the Azure blog, on Scott Guthrie's blog. Mm-hmm. But it's a REST API that you can call to get basically the prices for various types of resources in Azure and get pricing information about them, right? So for curb.com, which was an idea we were cooking on about saving people money in Azure by shutting down things and starting them up when you wanted them, one of the things we were talking about is there wasn't a good way to get pricing information from Azure programmatically.
Mm.
So we literally had to just go to their website and look it up. But this would have given us a nice API to call to get the current pricing info about Azure resources.
Yeah, that was the rate card. Yeah, and just as a little footnote there for people who are curious about Curb, it's not we're not talking about it in the past tense.
No.
It's just that it's, let's just say we have no update.
Correct.
So before anybody starts asking any questions, we have no update. Now we'll move back onto the news.
Yeah, go sign up for the mailing list and we'll stay in touch.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the news. Azure Usage API, a REST API that customers and partners can use to get their usage data for an Azure subscription. That's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
This will enable a whole set of people to build interesting tools and reports and all sorts of snazzy things on top of the new usage API.
Mm.
So you can see how much a how much Azure you are using. And the other interesting one is the cool thing here is you can tag your resources, right? So you could say, oh, this VM belongs to Project ABC. And then you can query based on things like that and see usage just based on various resource tags. So you could break it up by department or by project or by individual or by what have you. Be kind of cool. That'll be nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is very cool. That would have been, that's a nice API to have and being able to, I mean, it'd be cool to see what the ISVs have, what they come up with to show things like, what kind of usage you have, what your burn is. The tools that we get inside of Azure on the account side are not terribly sophisticated, but it'll be cool to see any kind of like trending information that you can pull out of your billing. And what'll also be really cool is I'd love to see some stuff for like in the IFTTT to where if I get to a certain level, I'd love to get certain email alerts or kind of warnings or stuff like that.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. And honestly, I mean, now we're seeing these kind of burn things. I mean, someone could probably even take a little startup that we had working on Curve and say, when you get to a certain spend over the course of a day or two, then kicks off an if that calls out to a REST API that automatically shuts off your VM. And then it puts us out of business before we even open our doors.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. We'll see.
Welcome to the business. That's cool.
Yeah. So that's the new Azure billing APIs.
Cool. Well, hey, I got another one I wanted to throw out there. This is the first installment of the Office 365 Developer Program, the June 2015 newsletter shipped last week.
Yes.
And I'm really pumped about this. I know this is coming out of your team, and we didn't talk about it. We were going to talk about this, but to me, this is a really big deal because trying to find out what's going on and what's new and what's latest with Office 365, we get this with Azure. We didn't get it until now with Office 365, and it's hard to stay on top. I mean, there's blogs and everything, but give me one newsletter once a month that tells me all the stuff that's been going on. My guess is that you guys are going to probably have to make this maybe even a bi-monthly or bi-weekly, sorry, twice a month newsletter. Mm. So this one's got for those of you who aren't signed up for this, you want to go to the dev.office.com over in the navigation down the left-hand side, you'll see a spot where it says dev program.
There's a big banner. Actually, there's a big banner at the top that says sign up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, a big yellow button. Click that.
Cool. So you can go there. You can sign up there. Just as a little touch of the stuff that you're going to find in here. There's actually a lot of stuff in here. So first, it's got a roll-up of the Dev Digest. So this is written by Jeremy Thake, who's on your team. But it's all the stuff that's all about developer-related stuff that you'll find over the last month. He posted that on the blog, but there's links to it in the Dev Digest here for both May and the June one. There's also an entry for support for add-in support for Office on the iPad, and we now have it for Excel, which is pretty cool, and Word. So both of those are now showing up on iOS. Another bit of news that we're going to talk about in a minute about Office Store news and the app launcher. We'll come back to that in a minute. But then there's some stuff about a program or a Word program that was going on and how Nintex won the WPC Partner of the Year for 2015,
yep.
As well as freebies for both Telerik and Drip at getdrip.com. The Kendo UI piece as well from Telerik. Those are freebies that are available for dev program members. So if you sign up, there's a way to go into the go get your information on how you can go redeem your freebies from those. But there's only a certain number that are available, so you want to run, don't walk, and get those, as well as some in person events and online events that you'll find in listed there for upcoming conferences. So I was really pumped to see this. I know that this was coming, but I'm really pumped to see you guys push this out. So congrats on you guys for putting this out. And I'd strongly recommend any Office 365 developer, you should go sign up. You should be on this mailing list that you guys are going
to
push out.
Yeah, thanks. It took us a lot longer than we wanted to get that done for all sorts of reasons, but I won't get into them here. But they were Yeah, I'm glad we got it done.
Yeah, I got a little bit of it, not to spare everybody the backstory. Nobody was like sitting on their laurels.
Oh no,
there were some. No. Let's just say there were some bull that had to, that was going on. That it wasn't your, it wasn't you guys' fault.
Yeah, thanks, man. That makes me feel better.
I felt for you.
Yeah, it did suck a lot, but we got there. So yeah, go sign up. You'll also get the Dev Digest is up on the Office Blogs WAC Dev blog once a month as well. But we'll also send out a synopsis of all of that in the newsletter to your inbox.
Awesome stuff.
Hey, I've got another one here. Office 365 plus web apps. So if you are a person building web applications in the cloud and you add Azure Active Directory authentication over the top, then anybody with Office 365 can sign into your application using their Office 365 credentials. And your app will then show up on the Office 365 app launcher or on the My Apps page.
Yeah, it shows up on the My Apps page, and then you can pin it to the app launcher.
Correct. So if you're building a product or a line of business system or some sort of app that's used internally, you can use this to get your application icon and tile on the app launcher for users right alongside. So it's for those of you who don't know what the app launcher is, it's when you click the little thing that looks like a waffle in the top left-hand corner of Office 365 to launch the list of apps that you've got access to, like Yammer, Calendar, Mail, People, OneDrive Sites, Tasks, all of that. That's the app launcher. So you can go drop your... you can go drop your app on that app launcher to give users easy access to it. Now, the other interesting thing is we've also launched store integration. So you'll see the Office 365 store tile will also pop up on the app launcher. And when you go to the store, you'll see these SaaS web applications from partners that we're onboarding become available, like DocuSign, Do, Smartsheet. There's one called Mail Responder as well. And those are all apps that you can go click sign in and acquire, and then it'll drop the icon on your app launcher for you, or in your My Apps page, and then you can pin it to the app launcher.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that capability of being able to take the having apps, adding them from Azure AD into your Office 365 or into your My Apps page and your app launcher, and then you can do single sign-on stuff. So you can even take ones that, like you say, custom ones. I can even take stuff with, like, say, GitHub or Smartsheets, and I could add those and easily just one click and have a single sign-on straight into those different environments, which is really cool. I mean, with some of them, if you have multi-factor auth turned on, like I do with like GitHub, then I've got to go punch in a pin code when I go to log in as well. But still, I mean, that's a big benefit. Now, what I'm not clear on, see, maybe you can answer this, is that, so the My Apps page and the app launcher,
yep.
App launcher is an Office 365 thing.
Yep.
My Apps page, that's an Office 365 thing, or is that an Azure AD thing?
It's a page that lives in Office 365, but the content of the page, i.e. the list of apps, we pull that from Azure AD.
Okay, so there is still yet another page that I go to if I don't have an Office 365 subscription and I'm using Azure AD, I go log in there and I can see all my apps from there as well, right?
Yeah, correct. So you can either go into the Azure portal and go into Azure AD and see the list of apps that have been registered for various users in your Azure Active Directory. Or I think you can also go to, is it apps.microsoft.com? I think that's the one. And so you can go see registered apps there. But if you've got 365, you can just click on My Apps. Oh, I think it's myapps.microsoft.com.
Very cool. So we got two other things just to point out here. I know we've mentioned it before on the podcast, but you started a Flipboard for the podcast, or primarily for the podcast, I guess, but it's really the Microsoft Cloud. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes where you can go take a look at that. We'll put a link to that as a general one on the site so you can make it easier for you guys to go see. But you and I are both adding links to that. So stuff that we find throughout the week, links that we talk about on the show are also links that are showing up in the Flipboard. And we may even add more stuff on Flipboard that's cloudy related, but we don't call out on the podcast.
You can go follow that and you just end up with all those news articles in Flipboard for you to read.
Right, right. And then the other thing that we've done is that, I guess you guys, you've set both of these up because they're really for you, but we're both involved in them. One is that we have a Slack channel or Slack team. So Slack, if you're not familiar with that, if you know what Yammer is, Slack is one of the fastest growing, like social kind of communication platforms that's out there right now. I'm a huge fan of Slack, but we've set one up. There's one set up for Office Dev. So it's kind of an open place for engineering and marketing from the Office 365 Microsoft side to talk to the community. That channel is just called, I think it's just called Office Dev, right?
Yeah, Office Dev.
Yeah. So you do a search for Office Dev on Slack and you'll find it. And there's a way you have to request an invitation, but anybody can get in. There's a, what we got, about 100 people in there right now.
Yeah.
And then you've also set up a Reddit, a subreddit for office development. So that's just reddit.com/r/office development.
Correct.
And right now there's a massive dearth of 12 people that are there. But you and I are the moderators for that to go through and to add in. We add links in, but people have questions. You can have chats in there. Be really cool to do like some Ask Me Anythings or some AMAs for those who aren't familiar with Reddit. But it's pretty slick. It's a great place to just to have conversations and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
So,
okay, favorite things.
Yeah, go for it. Give me some picks.
So I'll pick.
Or your pick.
I'll pick one, you pick one, okay?
Works for me.
So my favorite thing this week is the new GitHub engineering blog. So if you go to githubengineering.com, this is seriously cool stuff. So it's the engineering team that run GitHub, right? And they blog about how they do that.
Oh.
So my favorite one so far is a blog post by this guy called TMM1. Not entirely sure who that is, but I'm sure he's important. And it's entitled Deploying Branches to GitHub.com. And so this blog post, they talk about how developers write code, commit it, and then how that gets deployed out to production Git, to production GitHub. And they're deploying about 200 times a week.
200 times a week?
Yeah.
Wow.
They got a little chart in here, and it's all automated, as you'd expect. They got some nice, nice DevOps going on here. And so they automate, developers can go commit. They can go talk to this bot about, hey, I want to get my commit deployed to production. It gets put in a queue. It gets all, queued up and ready, and then it gets pushed out. And the bot deals with contention of pushes and who's doing what and when it should push it out. But it's all up to the developer to get their stuff into prod, which I thought was pretty cool stuff.
Wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. This would terrify some companies, right? Letting a developer write a piece of code, test a piece of code, and then get it into production.
Do they do a thing where you have to have a certain kind of experience points or something like that, where you can put, where a dev can push straight in?
I don't know. I don't think they talk about that.
So that's what Facebook does. That where like if you're an experienced dev and you write something and you write the tests and stuff, and there's a couple automated checks that happen when you check your code in, but if all your tests pass and you've got a good experience, then you can push straight into prod. It goes to like 10 servers and it gets tested. They run metrics. And then if that's good, it goes to 100, then 1,000, then 5,000, then 50,000.
Gets
rolled up.
They do have some what they call deploy guards, right? Which are your stuff is still got to run through the continuous integration test pass before it goes out, obviously. Like your tests are going to pass. But it doesn't say, that anybody could then push to prod or not anybody. So they don't get into that level of detail. But yeah, I just thought it was like really cool. Like I love the idea of lots of small deploys. Like that seems really cool and interesting.
I totally agree. Those tons of little deploys make it to where it's harder to have as a developer, I'm always terrified of doing a deploy because if it's a big deploy, I'm afraid of so much stuff I'm impacting that could bring stuff down.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that that lots of little deploys, like I feel so much more comfortable going, oh, I know this isn't going to affect anything. I know this isn't. I mean, of course, you've got the risk. More deployments means more chances for issues with happening in your environment.
Yeah. And what's really cool is all of the deployment and all the steps and all the logging and everything is all logged into a persistent chat. So all the dev team or the team that you're working with can see what's going on in prod, what the deployment queues are looking like, who's pushing what. It's like really nice and open and everybody gets to see what's going on in production.
Yeah, it's cool. I love how that works. And they've even got a Twitter account too, which is GitHub ENG is the Twitter handle. But what's pretty cool about it is the Octocat, the GitHub mascot, I guess. It's a chick.
Huh.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff.
So go check out githubengineering.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've got one that is not nearly work-related, but it's definitely got a geek and tech factor that I think people will think is kind of cool. I'm hoping or expecting that a lot of our listeners are at least are familiar with this game. But back when we were growing up, there was a first person shooter that really blew up the world of gaming. Castle or Wolfenstein was the first one, but then it was the Doom.
Oh yeah,
franchise. So Doom by the guys at id Software.
Yep. The BFG.
Yep. And they took the source code for Doom and it's been put up on GitHub. So id Software's put it up there. And someone went and found a certain C file that is the random, it's literally called the random number generator of Doom. And so you think it's like, you say that to someone, they think, oh, it's a joke. Random number generator. It's hard to say that fast. Random number generator of Doom.
Yep.
And it's not like some, you know, oh my God, it's a horrible number generator. No, literally, it was the random number generator for the game called Doom.
That's pretty sweet. So. That's pretty cool. Oh man, I spent many hours on that game.
Way too much. But fun. That was a fun book. Did you ever read the book? What was it called? Masters of Doom?
No, I never read it, but you've told me about it before. I should read it.
Yep. Epic book. Talks about all that kind of stuff too. But it's really neat. Really neat. See John Carmack, the guy's behind Oculus Rift now, and who's in charge of it. And so it's pretty cool.
Nice. Hey, so we've got an interview this week that you recorded some time back. Why don't you intro that?
I will. Yeah. So last week I was at the SharePoint or the SP TechCon Dev Days conference in San Francisco. You and I did a little show out there. But I sat down with an attendee of the show, a guy named Jerry Pierre, and Jerry works for an organization. Major geek factor. Oh gosh, I just forgot what the thing's called. It's called Slack. What does it stand for? The Linear Accelerator?
Yes, yeah, Slack, National Accelerator Laboratory. So it is the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center.
Yeah. So this is run by Stanford on behalf of the Department of Energy. There's a couple of these that are out there. The most popular one, or the most noteworthy one that I think that most people probably heard of is the one over in between France and Switzerland, called CERN, C-E-R-N, which was the one that found the Higgs boson particle or the God particle a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But so Jerry and I sat down to talk a little bit about how they're using cloud. So they are exploring using Azure for their business. And we talked a lot about how it's helping them. And you'll hear how they're first looking at going into IaaS and really to help them scale up. They've got this interesting thing where, you know, they've got experiments that go on, thousands of sensors pulling in millions of data points. And that takes a lot of computing power. And when scientists spend a lot of money to be able to use these accelerators for different experiments, and they want the results pretty quick. Not only that, they don't want to have any kind of limit on the data processing. So they're using, exploring how to use both IaaS and how to use PaaS, and even using machine learning to look at all the different data points coming in and training it to say, oh, this is an anomaly, but it's not an anomaly you have to really pay attention to. We know based on these other things that we can throw it out. So
yeah, gotcha.
Man, it was a really cool chat with him. So it was really interesting stuff. And he's a SharePoint engineer for them and is getting into the whole Angular side and Office 365 and Azure AD side and stuff. So he was there to learn about all that at the conference. But it was really cool to see how they're using Azure. So we sat down to talk for about 20-22 minutes, and so why don't we go ahead and play the interview and then call it an episode.
Sounds good.
Cool. Well, hey, good talking to you this week, CJ, and hope you guys enjoy this interview. All right, this is Andrew. So I'm sitting here on June the 26th, 2015. I'm sitting here in the Hyatt. We're at the SP TechCon conference here in San Francisco, California, and we're just spending a little time sitting here with Jerry, who's one of the attendees, and you guys do some interesting stuff with Azure. So before we dive into this and just talk about how you guys are using the cloud, Jerry, tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, you know, who are you? How can people find you?
Sure. My name is Jerry Pierre. I work for Slack Stanford, also known as Slack Linear Accelerator. It stands for Slack Linear Accelerator Center. I'm a SharePoint architect, solution architect. I also do a bit of IT stuff, a little bit of everything else. But my main task is SharePoint architecting, manage the whole stack. Recently, actually the past 6 months, we've been looking into Azure deeply because we have an extremely aging data center. In the data center, we have two parts, right? You have your business servers, and then you have your high-performance servers. Mm-hmm. Now, the high-performance, or I should say high-performance computer. Mm-hmm. And the high-performance computer is where the scientists perform their experiments and so forth. And these experiments are really extensive. They require tremendous tremendous amount of processing and CPU. But the thing about it is that we have to purchase we have to estimate how much CPU usage we're going to be using for a particular experiment, and then purchase the hardware, install it. I mean, it's just a ton of work just to get it up and running.
Yeah, and you can't go short on it either, because you don't want to sit there and be a bottleneck for their experiments. So you got to go over and buy something bigger than what you really need to make sure you have that extra leeway in case there's some stuff you didn't expect, or you want to be able to have enough runway.
Exactly. So what we want to do is we're looking into Azure so that if there's a particular experiment, let's say that takes about 250 cores, and we only could support 150 cores. With Azure, we could scale that up as quickly as we want, and as soon as the experiment is done, we could shrink it back down or completely disassemble it. So that it improves efficiency. It's a huge cost saving to our clients because we have scientists who they pay a tremendous amount of money to use the accelerator for 1 hour. And whether the experiment is successful or not, we take that money and we run with it.
Yeah.
Should I say that? I don't know if I should say that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, though. So what you're speaking the classic thing that where people want to they use the cloud for just like a utility computing, right? So you don't have to sit there and maintain the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You go get what you need and you ramp up as fast as you can and as much as you need for that time, whatever that experiment is.
Exactly. Yeah. And for the part that I own, which is the SharePoint part, it's this huge challenge because there's always, we're always fighting for resources, financial resources. Mm-hmm. So when there's a huge amount of money that comes in, we need to take advantage of that as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So what we do, we buy the beefiest servers that we could possibly buy with that money that comes in, because we don't know if we're going to get that money in 2, 3, 4 years from now. We don't know if we're going to get money to replace those servers. Mm-hmm. So I have these, our servers is pretty beefy. Meaning that throughout the day, it could go like the SQL Server backend could go from 2%, for 3, 4, 5 hours, and maybe 10 to 15% for a few hours, and that's it. And it goes back down to 5, maybe 2%.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of resources that we're wasting away.
Gotcha.
So if we could move that over to the cloud and really utilize it, let's say we keep it at 60 to 70, maybe 80%. If it goes beyond that, when we scale it up, we're much more efficient in how we use those resources.
Gotcha.
And then we could spread it across the board. And also, we could reduce the footprint in our data center because now we don't have to worry about cabling. We don't have to worry about hiring extra people to manage those servers.
Yeah.
The energy costs for cooling, keeping the servers cool.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about those things. Now, again, we can't we cannot necessarily move everything to the cloud, but because there's certain applications that have to live in-house,
right,
on-premise.
Yeah.
But at least we could reduce that footprint and we don't have to always have to struggle about how we're going to manage and how we're going to get the resources to support this server and how we're going to scale up. So we don't have to worry about those aspects.
That's cool. So that's a lot of like how you guys are using it from the IaaS perspective for it. So using a lot of the utility computing, simplifying a lot of the management, the manpower
Correct.
Stuff requires you have, and it makes you more nimble to where you don't have to buy a bunch of servers that you're going to have to depreciate over time. Take
Correct.
Advantage of it just using the cloud stuff.
Yeah, it gives us more agility because now if it is in the cloud and for whatever reason we need to bring it on-premise, we have that flexibility where we can do that.
Gotcha.
And if we bring it on-premise and then a few weeks later, a month later, we decide, okay, we don't need this on-premise, we have the flexibility to bring it back to the cloud as well.
How long have you had this kind of an infrastructure? I mean, it was before, I'm sure you had all this stuff was on-prem and you were using the on-prem servers. When did you guys make that switch to the cloud and how long has that been going on?
Well, we haven't made the switch yet.
Oh, okay.
We're still doing proof of concept. We're exploring. Okay. We're looking at how reliable is Azure.
Gotcha.
And we're looking at Amazon as well.
That's my next question.
Yeah, Amazon is Google. Most likely it's going to be the hybrid of the two between Azure and AWS.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at different tools for orchestration, because we want to be able to say if something happened, like something in Microsoft blows up, we want to be able to take the VM from Azure and move it to AWS and back and forth, or even on-premise. So we want to have that flexibility. So we're doing a lot of proof of concept, a lot of experimenting and exploring.
Okay, looking at AWS, both in Amazon and AWS, and from the IaaS perspective. So are you guys doing anything outside of just IaaS? Are you doing anything with any of the PaaS offerings that you're doing? PaaS
all three.
All three,
yeah,
okay.
All three.
So what about, are you doing that in Azure? Are you doing that in AWS? Where are you doing that?
I'm more focused on Azure.
Okay.
Because, again, it's a huge space.
Yeah.
You know, when I started getting into it, I said, okay, I want to be a cloud architect. And then I really looked into it. I was like, okay, then that means I have to be I have to be an expert in Azure, AWS, Google, a lot of the different technology. But in order to really be good at it, you really need to focus on a particular product, service, which would be. So I saw the vision of what Microsoft is doing, and the way they have been moving the past year, it's been like lightning speed.
I saw something where they had like 400 product releases in the last year for Azure.
Wow.
Something like, I think that's what I saw at the Build conference. It's crazy. Yeah, they move it at a breakneck pace.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And also the first time ever, you know, how long I've been programming for 15 years and always Microsoft. Is the first time I had the ability to talk to the product team and also talk to actually engineers who are developing the product, which I thought was amazing because I was never able to do that before.
Yeah, you're just reading the documentation, going to the forums and getting other people that are having trouble with it and stuff.
Exactly. I'm having beers with them, talking, and you know, I'm like, wow, this is great, fantastic. So the culture shift has changed tremendously for the positive.
Kind of feels like we're all in it together a little bit more, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what kind of stuff are you doing then with PaaS? What kind of the services are you using from Azure?
Okay, so again, we're still exploring,
but
we have a lot of applications. At least we have a whole development team and we're looking to start taking a lot of those applications that's utilizing a lot of the servers and so forth and just move it into more of a PaaS type of infrastructure.
Okay.
Because now at this point, the developer could focus on developing and not have to worry about the whole infrastructure.
Yep.
And also, they don't have to keep calling IT and say, okay, I need permission to do this. Oh, can you get the logs for this?
Right.
Oh, you know, I need perfmon because, you know, something is going on. Can you get me the documentation or the statistics for that.
So doing a lot more like the DevOps kind of stuff and kind of empowering your devs to build out a lot more of this. You say you're experimenting and evaluating stuff right now. How much of it are you're actually running projects in there to see what's available to you? I mean, is it real world projects you guys are running right now in it in terms of in the experiment or just kind of like the trial phase in a sense?
It's more in the trial phase, but a lot of the proof of concept is real world proof of concept.
Okay, I got you.
You know, and it's in a process where, oh, okay, this is running well.
Yeah.
Okay, good. When we're ready to, you know, to flip the switch, we know we can actually do it and we move forward. So especially after this event, I'm going to start talking to a lot of my developers and do presentation and just show the value of being on the cloud, what kind of value it could bring, how easy it is. And some things are easy, some things are not easy, but what is the possibility?
Yeah.
And you know, give them greater options.
So first, how are the development managers? And then second, how are the developers, how are they taking this? Is it something that they're fighting back on? Is it something that they're cautiously optimistic on, so they're eager on? How do you see this kind of, how are they, what's their attitude?
It's kind of like the whole human factor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like change, you know.
Yeah.
People don't like change.
Some people really don't like change. Some people really like change, right? So yeah, so what? Yeah. How are they taking it?
Let's see. There is interest, but with extreme caution.
So a lot of curiosity, but just kind of like, I'm not sure if this is going to work for us.
Yes, exactly.
Is
exactly. Is
that in a feature perspective, like, am I going to be able to do the same things that I do today in the cloud?
That is correct.
Is it also, do you have anybody doing like with an attitude of, I don't want to do it this way because it's going to make it harder for me? I won't have as much power of doing the same kind of stuff that I do today. I lose some of that by working in the cloud, letting them hand it off. Are there pieces to it that they're really eager to jump into, like that they're looking forward to taking advantage of?
Well, this is the part where I have to start educating them.
Gotcha.
And say, okay, you know, and depending on what you do, depending on what you want to do, you may not want to do all these, all the plumbing aspect of it, right? Because mm-hmm. you want to focus on solving the business problem, building a solution that would solve the business problem.
Right.
So we want to empower you to do that. But a lot of times they're just scared because it's a very, very unfamiliar territory.
Sure.
So I'm going to have to do a lot of hand holding and a lot of presentation and show them that, hey, you don't have to be afraid of it. This is good change.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to happen whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
Because that is the future. And
yeah.
It's here.
Yeah. Yeah. There was somebody that was saying that, I think it was there was a panel that we had yesterday if anybody's interested in hearing the panel, it was really good. Jeremy Thake recorded it for his podcast. I know it's coming out in an upcoming show. But I think that one of the things I heard like Scott Hillier say during that panel was that you're all going to the cloud. Whether you like it or not, you're going to the cloud. I thought some people said, you know, there's no way we're going to do this. Our business is going to stay right here. And we say that we're not going to the cloud regardless. Mm. Paul Schaeflein had a really good comment where it's like, you know, well, How about Sears and how about, what was the other one? General Motors. They didn't change. And how did that work out for them? It didn't work out so well, right?
Exactly.
So it's just that you're going to go to the cloud. And it's not so much that you're going to go to the cloud because everyone says you're going to go to the cloud. It's that it simply is cheaper for the majority of the organizations out there. It is simply a cheaper option.
Yeah. And that's the main reason why we're exploring, because again, we have a limited budget.
Yeah.
And so exactly. So we need to find a solution where we could continue to do, we could continue to enable science to do what they need to do, but do it in a cheaper manner. Because the way we continue, the way we have been doing it, it cannot sustain itself.
Yeah. Are there parts to that too, where even though you're doing it for a cost reason, that you see certain things that you're doing, you're saying that this is going to enable new scenarios, stuff mm-hmm. that you can't do today. So you'll be able to handle different kinds of experiments or give the scientists additional capabilities that they couldn't have done previously.
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah.
What you're saying is all correct. All the above.
Do you see, do you know of any other organizations like yourself that have started to make this kind of leap? Or are you working with other organizations that are in the same boat as you, where you're kind of dipping your toes in the water and seeing
there's a lot of other laboratories that do fairly the same thing that we're doing, and they're all looking into cloud solutions.
All right, really?
Of those very reasons.
Any ones that anybody would recognize?
CERN is a big one. Right?
Yeah. This is funny. We were talking to you about this earlier, and you just throw CERN like it's like, oh yeah, well CERN's looking at it too.
Yeah.
This is the massive collider that's in the between France and Switzerland.
Correct.
Is that it? Yeah,
correct.
Strauss, the giant thing where they're the ones
I
that
think
did the
17.5 miles.
Yeah, the giant ring in the ground, and it did. It's the one that discovered the Higgs boson.
Yeah. Boson.
Bosons.
Yeah, the God particle.
Yeah, the God particle. Yeah. That's pretty cool stuff. Are you working with anybody at Microsoft that's helping you guys kind of like to do this? Or?
Yes, we're supporting. We did a proof of concept about 6 months ago, and we're working with the streaming analytics teams and also the open source team. So they help us build the proof of concept, which was very successful.
Oh, cool.
So, and again, this is how I got to meet a lot of the, you know, product team, talking to the engineers who actually build those things.
Yeah.
So I was amazed where in the first meeting, almost all these guys were there. And I'm like, whoa, you did that? You built this? How cool is that?
Now, how much of that is that flipped around the other side where they're sitting there and they're not just explaining to you what they've done, but they're asking like what you're doing and trying to see like, oh, they're asking you questions and you're giving them ideas about things for future capabilities or features. I mean, how much of that's going on?
Oh, yeah. So it was a constant back and forth. And you know, tremendous synergy, you know, because again, with the accelerator, we have like thousands of sensors.
Yeah.
Right? And each sensor is do something different. And we have a product, which is kind of like the broker that manage all the different sensors.
Yeah.
But the problem is we have tons and tons of data per second that's pumping through. No human, I don't care how smart you are, can actually look at all those data and detect anomalies.
Yeah.
So this is where we're talking about. We're also working with the machine learning team.
I was just about to ask that. Cool. Yeah.
To be able to say, okay, well, you know, there's a device and something is not working quite right.
Yeah.
So the data flow is you know, the numbers and the data flow is just, you know, it's so minute that the human eye can't pick it up. But of course, you know, with machine learning, it could detect these strange anomalies and then alert us. And then we could take a look at it and say, okay, all right, with this anomaly, is this really an issue, or is just, you know, just something that's not a big deal? What we can do, we could teach it and say, oh, no, this is not a big deal. This is caused because of this and this. Yeah. And it'll go, oh, okay, it stores that. And then in the next anomaly, when it sees the same thing, it just says, oh, okay, this is normal. Ignore it. And then it sees another strange anomaly and say, okay, I'm not familiar with this. Let me alert this. Yeah. And then we take a look at it and we say, oh, yeah, this is an issue. So it's a constant back and forth learning. We teach it and it teaches us.
See, that, and that's enabling a scenario that you could not have done on-prem, that without Azure or without machine learning, without the cloud, you would have not been able to do that. It sounds
absolutely
like
not.
It's something that they can only handle for. So is it that, is there like a long-term kind of vision where, I mean, I see a lot of companies taking IaaS and moving a lot of this, moving over to IaaS is kind of like a stopgap, the first kind of jump over to the cloud. And then, but then they want to really architect new systems, you're building them on PaaS, not building them on IaaS. Is that fair to say what you guys are doing?
That is fair, yes.
Okay, so is it like the long-term kind of thing is not to really have IaaS? The long-term thing is to be able to run all your stuff in PaaS, with on PaaS instances?
I think they're always going to be a hybrid
type
of situation.
Hybrid in the cloud, hybrid between IaaS and PaaS.
It'll be a hybrid between IaaS and PaaS, right?
Yeah, because there's a new kind of hybrid. We usually be on-prem in the cloud.
Exactly. I have to be more detailed about that. Yeah.
There's a lot of hand architecting going on right here. You guys get the other thing.
I think I should be Italian. Yeah. So the long-term solution is to move from IaaS to PaaS, because with IaaS, there's a lot of work. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure stuff that a lot of piping that you have to do to get things working. And if we could simplify that greatly and just focus on the application itself, and then all the energy that's spent in maintaining the infrastructure, we could focus that on the application and improving that and provide business value to our scientists.
That's awesome. That's cool. That's really exciting.
Yes, yes, it is. Every day is an adventure.
Cool. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we wrapped it up? Or
by the way, you exploded my mind about like 6-7 times already. I mean, there's so much information. I mean, it was like a fire hose. So, you know, I just, oh my God, it's going to take me like months to go over all the materials that you demonstrated today. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, we did.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I did a workshop this morning on on-ramp to the Azure AD and O365 API highway. And it really was more 20 minutes, I guess, or 30 minutes of Office 365 API. But we spent the majority of time with OAuth and authentication.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was nice. It was the first time that I had kind of like a no time limit on how long to talk about OAuth. Usually you're in these sessions that's like maybe an hour long, or I teach a classroom thing where I've only got like a little bit of time, like maybe an hour to talk about it. Because we can't take up time for the rest of the content. But today we had almost 3 hours, about 2 hours and 45 minutes this morning, and only spent about 20 or 30 minutes at the very end just talking about the 365 APIs. That's the easy part. The hard part is all the AD part, the OAuth stuff. So
yeah, I only knew,
cool, like, I appreciate your comment.
When I came in, I only knew 10%.
Yeah.
Now I know like 80%. Maybe 85.
Yeah.
Now I just have to spend time to make sure that it actually sinks in. Because, you know, like you said, it took you about 6 to 8 months in order for it to really solidify in your mind.
So, yeah. It takes time. And it takes time. And it also, you have to find a way it's explained that resonates with you. For me, it took 6 to 8 months for somebody to explain it in a way that resonated with me. It's one of those topics that I say that people explain the same way, and everyone does it, explains it the exact same way. And if that doesn't mesh with you, with it didn't with me, then you're kind of screwed until someone else comes along. And with this one thing, it just seemed like no one was explaining that it was getting it to me. Finally, one person did. It's like, and the light kind of clicked. Yeah. So finally, the light turned on.
The light, it hasn't completely clicked.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's more than halfway there.
We're at least running power to the room.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, Jerry, thanks a lot for taking the time talking
Indeed.
About this.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.